used to be that being middle class meant you could afford a piece of the American dream. Of course, the recession has battered everyone's financial aspirations. But economist Juliette Shore says it's not just the American economy that's broken. It's the American dream. And what we really need is a new one. Shore is the author of Plenitude, The New Economics of True Wealth, and she's the co-founder of the Center for a New American Dream. Now, perhaps, like me, you're wondering what was wrong with the old one.
The American dream started out with a good vision, I think, which had to do with opportunity, hard work and opportunity, but it morphed into something which was much more about materialism and a large size new house in a suburban development, late model SUVs, high levels of material consumption. And that's not ecologically sustainable. And it also has proven to be economically difficult in a world in which it has been increasingly a small fraction of people who can afford that kind of lifestyle. So it's beginning to feel more and more unattainable to people.
The American dream we've all believed in, you're saying, was based on essentially the economics of more, and we need an economics of less?
We need an economics of enough. And I think one of the things that happened is by focusing so much on more and not thinking enough about more of what, we ended up on a kind of treadmill to nowhere in which the race to get all those things became pernicious in itself. People had to work longer and longer hours. They had to take on more debt. We became a society of more and more inequality and less cooperation and community.
I actually like the use of the word enough, because it sounds like what you're saying is we need to redefine ourselves. And defining ourselves as achieving less doesn't sound very positive. It sounds small. It sounds uncomfortable, frankly. Enough, well, maybe that is enough.
Yes. And in fact, my most recent book is titled Plenitude, because what I want to get across to people is a life which decenters material acquisition in the way we've thought about it, and which reorients us toward community and social ties, toward living in balance with nature, toward having sane schedules where people actually have free time. Those are forms of wealth, which will actually give us more well-being than more material goods in that endless quest.
Well, so how do we redefine this? Because the problems we're facing, I mean, the big one is unemployment right now, for instance. A lot of people have stopped even looking for a job because they don't believe there's ever going to be a job for them. How do you deal with, well, a problem like unemployment? How do you find more jobs?
I think the biggest thing that we need to do is to adjust working hours. Since the 1970s, the U.S. has increasingly devoted its productivity growth to expanding the economy. And what this meant is that we stopped getting increases in free time, reductions in working hours, in contrast to Europeans and Japanese, who began to get longer vacations, shorter weekly hours of work, more days off per year. So, for example, one of the kinds of things that I think we should be doing is hiring new people on 80% schedules so we can gradually move toward a four-day work week and a three-day weekend, something that makes a lot of sense in a country where you have large numbers of dual-earner families, for example.
For every five people who go to an 80% schedule, there's one more job. Is that the idea?
Exactly. Now, what it means is that those people who get hired at, let's just be simple about it, 80% of the salary that they might have gotten if they were on a 100% job. But what we know about income in wealthy countries is that what matters most is comparative position. So if everyone is going to 80% eventually, the whole status game, the whole increasing norms of consumption gets slowed down and people get more free time and less pressure to ratchet up their lifestyle.
What about the other side of the equation? How likely is it that employers will be interested in this? Because frankly, what we've seen is reduction in the number of people and an increase in the number of hours that they are expected to work, isn't it?
Absolutely. So the employer side has been difficult for reasons of accident in part, which is that a lot of the benefits that employers pay in this economy are paid on a per person basis. And the most expensive of those is health care. And that's an accident because the reason we have health care being provided by employers is that during the Second World War, when there were wage and price controls, employers who wanted to pay more to their workers weren't able to through straight wage increases. And so one of the ways they got around it was by starting to offer them other benefits, for example, health insurance.
So how would you deal with it? If you start having people work 80%, would you also give them 80% of the health care benefits?
There are a lot of ways to go on this. You could have the government subsidize that 20% to begin with. It could give incentives to firms to hire on this 80% schedule. You could also make available lower cost plans for people. That's what the public option does. I mean, ultimately, single payer or any other health care regime that gets health care out of the employment relationship will solve this problem.
Can you really segue onto a different path like this? Because there are multiple things that have to change. It's not just a matter of the government deciding or the individual deciding or the business deciding. Everybody has to kind of get together and agree on a different American dream.
Yes and no. I mean, I think there are things you can do at the policy level, and there are also changes that can be taking place at a sort of population or household level that can move you to there more or less gradually. So I look at the example of the Netherlands, where I lived in the 1990s. In the early 80s, they had very high unemployment. All of Europe, Western Europe, was suffering a big negative shock, as we call it in economics, to employment. The government responded by deciding to make its labor market very flexible and to put more of these short schedules in. So, for example, all new government employees went on 80% schedules. Eventually, the whole Dutch financial sector went on to 80% schedule.
The whole Dutch financial?
Yes.
So banks and investment firms went to 80%?
4-day work weeks. Yep. It sounds kind of crazy almost in the era that we've just come through. But, you know, American working schedules are really quite different than schedules in other places. And the average Dutch employee today is working about 1,340 hours a year in comparison to places like the United States, where we're more like 1,700-1,800. They also have extremely low unemployment and been the most productive labor force in Europe over this period. That's another great thing that shorter hours do. It makes the hours that people do work much more productive.
So, is there evidence to suggest what these people are doing with the extra time that they have?
They have a more traditional gender division of labor, so they do tend to do a lot of things that in America we buy on the market, whether it's making costumes for their kids, arts and crafts, do-it-yourself renovations, and that sort of thing. They also take very long vacations. They have many weeks of vacation. When I lived there, I had 8 weeks of vacation paid. And not only that, in your June paycheck, you get an extra month's of pay. So you get double pay in June. They've held out some salary all during the year so that you have extra money to go on vacation. The other thing is they spend a lot of time with family. Sunday is a big family day. So they have a high level of friend and family interaction. So they've really managed to hold on to a lot of that community that many Americans are so hungry for.
You talk around the country about this. What kind of reaction do you get from people when you give those talks?
For the most part, I would say people are very enthusiastic or open to the idea that we need to do something different in this country, that we need a new kind of economy, we need a new American dream. However, there is also a climate of a sort of certain opinion that says it's impossible, we could never do that. We could never have shorter hours in this country, or companies will never do this. So there's a mantra about the impossibility of change that many people still hold. I would say since the downturn, and even more since the Occupy movement, that is a less powerful voice.
Juliette Shore is an economist and sociologist at Boston College. She's the co-founder of the Center for a New American Dream. Her new book and her blog are called Plenitude: The New Economics of True Wealth.